Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 639, continuing our team-by-team previews for the 2024 fantasy baseball season. We're still in the AL East, and we're heading to South Beach, to the Miami Marlins, a team that does have some very interesting fantasy players, but also a whole lot of, and that's what we're going to get into to see what's good and what's bad in Miami. And to help me break that out, who better to tell me what's good and what's bad in life and in fantasy baseball than a guy that's crushing it at MLBPlayingTime.com. It's a great resource for your lineups, lefty, righty, splits, all the good stuff. And, you know, he gets bored. There'll be more stuff as time goes on. And you can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. My buddy, Mike Curlin, how you doing?
Fantastic, Bubba. You know, I dressed up as the Florida man last time I was on your podcast, and I should have brought the Florida man type of vibe
for this one.
But the problem is this isn't a Florida man. There's not a whole lot of exciting things with the Marlins. I know you joked because you knew I was gonna be pessimistic today, because team, like, there's a couple exciting players, but I don't know. It is what it is. We'll see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, to say the least, but we'll have some fun with it. Before we get into that, plug away at MLBPlayingTime.com.
Should I do it for 6 minutes again?
No. Preferably not, but I'm giving you some time to go here.
I'm joking. It's that was funny. I'm glad I got multiple text messages about that, by the way. But
really?
But it was because I was excited, and I still am, but we're kind of like just moving through the motions now, waiting for signings, as, like, you know, Joey Gallo signed. So in on some interest, some contract information, but I'm kind of
offended that your top person is not Rhys Hoskins. You said Joey Gallo was signed. Come on, man. What show are you on?
Well, we're going to get there, but I was going to go Joey Gallo signed. So I updated that. I was going to say Rhys Hoskins just signed. We're going to go. So I updated that one. I just think it's one of those things where Rhys Hoskins is more obvious. Joey Gallo, people might not realize, like, 100%. One of the beat writers mentioned they wanted a lefty outfielder, but then you look at this roster and they didn't have a first baseman because Joey Meneses, although can play first base, I don't think he's the starting first baseman just because last year how they utilized him, or lack thereof, at first base. 19 games, so he just missed eligibility, I believe. But they've already come out and said that they want him to be more of a DH. So if that's the case, Gallo plays first. I think I'm personally plugging Gallo in at first base. Why does it matter? Because that leaves that, I feel like it's a little more security for everyone's, like, favorite Stone Garrett. Mm-hmm. So I think Stone Garrett has a little more security than we might expect, assuming that they hold true to what they said about Meneses DHing. So that's kind of the main fallout. That's kind of what the main point of the site is to not only offer lefty righty lineups on my lineup pages, but then the notes kind of highlight my reasoning why I might play, have a guy plugged in here versus here, track records, etc. So of course, Rhys Hoskins just signed. That's updated already. And I usually update them if I'm not available the day of. It's the very next morning when I'm either first thing I do when I get home type of thing from work, stuff like that. So, but it's pretty up to date, pretty quick, and it has all the lineup stuff. I'm going to probably do a little write up about these moves. Like, so how I'm mentioning Joey Gallo, I'll probably do a write up on how, obviously, stock up for him, who it affects, Rhys Hoskins, how Willy Adames kind of might slide down the lineup a little bit versus righties. And although a small downgrade, it's still technically one because now he's going to get a few less plate appearances most likely to start the year if he hits where I'm thinking he's going to hit around fifth against righties. So, again, just little things, just something worth mentioning, like, hey, just watch those plate appearances and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm talking very small playing time issues for him. Obviously, Jake Bauer takes a big hit, etc. So that's kind of the main purpose of the site, just to watch all those trends and just kind of have the whole site just be about playing time, performance, anything like that. And usually write up the implications of it. And then those implications, I let the viewer take them because it's a very objective. It's a very objective view of the implications, and you can apply them how you see fit.
Yep, most definitely good stuff. I hope people are using it because it is very, very helpful to mix and match things and go from there. The other question I'll ask you before we get started as well is I'd ask every guest on this show, because majority are fans of the team, how were your thoughts on 2023 as a Marlins fan?
Surprising. I didn't expect them to be as competitive as they were. And I think if you look at like the run differential, I think they were one of those teams that shouldn't have been as competitive as they were. I think they were like a negative. I have to go back and look. But I remember at one point they were like winning record with like a negative 30 run differential or something stupid. Like it just didn't make sense. And this team isn't built to, this team is built to scrape by. Because as we'll get into like the hitters and stuff, they have some pop, but they lack some on base guys. They kind of have some at the top, but it's a lot of boom or bust in this line. It feels like a lot of mediocrity. Losing Soler crushes them, and I don't see this team. This team hasn't made a free agent signing yet. We're what, January 24th. Mm-hmm. They've made a ton of front office moves that are actually probably the most interesting thing about this offseason is looking at this team as I think they're about to go full. Like every player is rumored to being traded, and not just old guys. We're talking about pretty much everybody but Yuri Perez was kind of one of the reports I saw floating around there, and I'm like, so that means Jesus Lizardo, who's in his prime, has a few years of control. He could be out the door by midseason. Braxton Garrett seems like an obvious trade candidate. Jake Berger, if he hits really well for the first half. Josh Bell, obviously, I think he's on the final year of that deal. I think this team's looking to move on and move their window to a couple of years from now, because I believe the guy they brought in was from the Rays, like one of the main guys that's like yes. looking to kind of do that. So, and then they brought in another, because you know they don't develop pitching well enough, obviously. So the Marlins brought in that guy from Driveline for to help with pitching and create like a spot mm-hmm. for him. They brought in the young lady from the Yankees. Apparently, I knew nothing about her. I forget her name, but apparently she has a really good reputation, because I asked the fans. First thing was like, hey, fans, someone tell me, and you know, Yankees fans on Twitter, of all places, too, are going to be super honest about a person. Mm-hmm. I've heard of her, and I knew of her, but I didn't know the reputation of her, and she has a great reputation so for player development and stuff like that in the minor leagues. I'm like, sweet. She has a larger role with us. So it's like one of those things where I'm loving these moves from the front office point of view. But that's telling me that this team is really going to try to be like the Rays and not a team. It's just so all it is a new ownership with a willingness to lean more on the analytics and player development side of things, which is fine. But I wish they would maybe they'll get back to mid-tier spending again, because maybe that's what it is. They're waiting. They're trying to get the Abby Garcia contract off the books. They just got Soler's contract off the books. So get clear up some of the space that they use on guys that aren't panning out, and maybe fix some of the player development while also, you know, bulking up the minors. And in 2-3 years, this team can be a Rays type best case scenario. There's a chance we end up being more like the Giants than the Rays. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. No offense, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
My point being though, I really like the direction they're going with player development, because this team has lacked in player development in terms of the offensive side of things. Obviously pitching has not been an issue, but the Marlins' lack of signings, letting players go like a Soler, not being in on a Hoskins at that price, that tells you all you need to know about what direction the Marlins are moving. So I'm rather pessimistic. I don't think they're gonna be as lucky with their run. I mean, they have the pitching to kind of scrape out those low win types of like those low run types of games, but that's a hard line to toe 2 years in a row. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a team that has surprised us in recent years, but if they start wheeling and dealing and rebuilding or whatever you want to call it with where they're at right now, could obviously make things interesting. Very tough division, as we've noted on this show, as we've gone through the Braves and the Mets, and then you have the Phillies who make runs every year. Like it's
I get it. Team. I get it. Okay.
I'm just you know, throwing all the opportunities for
it sucks.
At least you're not the Nationals. Maybe we'll see. Well, I've got that preview coming up later this week. But let's get into the hitters on the Marlins side of things. And we'll start with DJ Jazzy Jazz, Jazz Chisholm. And it's just the yearly thing that I think it's a broken record now is stay healthy. This guy's amazing. Well, right now you're only paying an ADP of 75, give or take, which is actually kind of low, it feels like, in recent years for Jazz Chisholm, but probably appropriate for what we get. What's your thoughts on Chisholm? Is it just same old, stay healthy? Or do you have, like, better expectations?
No, it's a matter of if you think he can stay healthy, which – he hasn't really proven to be able to. Jazz is a smash at the spot. but I've seen him fall. Like, I actually, at one point I had his max, I got one or two shares and they both been past ADP.
Yeah, right now, Max is 100 over like the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and back when I got him was a couple drafts ago, and he wasn't on my targets, but he's a guy I'm not fading. I just, at that price, I like, there's guys that I trust more, or I'm going for starting pitching, so I haven't landed on him, and so I guess I am out on the ADP, but when he falls, like when Jazz falls, like the 90-ish range, which is where he fell in the one draft I took him, that was an easy take, and I think we could see Jazz, like he's not a guy who, I think he's a guy who's going to fluctuate, I think Jazz, because of the health, but I'm more like, I will take him closer to the max pick, as I've proven to do, but I'm pretty much out at his pick. I do like Jazz. I mean, I think there's no denying the talent at this point. You know what he is. He's a guy who has 30-30 potential. I just don't know if he'll ever get there because can he stay healthy for it? So that's all you got to do. Are you willing to take the risk? And I think it's fine. I'm honestly fine with you, anyone taking the risk in the fifth or sixth round. It's just a matter of you better build for that. You have to know that you're going to need an extra outfielder, or you're going to have to be a little more willing to stream outfield if it's a fab league, or you know, whatever, if it's not a draft in the hole. I'm just, right now I'm full on DC in my mind right now, so it's like maybe if you do DCs, you go for 10 outfielders, maybe grab an 11th, knowing that Jazz might need that replacement value, that replacement, and Jazz plus replacement value outfielder like a Charlie Blackman maybe or something might be a serviceable, like might end up paying off his draft price type of thing. So there's a lot to consider. However, it's just one of those things where I don't land on him at ADP, but I am taking him when he falls. So I guess I'm technically out at cost, but I'm not out on the player if he falls beyond that.
Yeah, no.
In picks or max pick or beyond the ADP.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I still have a soft spot for Jazz because this is a legit,
he's just so good,
30-30 beast if he stays healthy. And that's just the if we've been waiting for. But we just saw Lubob finally do it last year, put up like 38 and 20. So it's doable. It's just like the thing we said last year, even when they said, we're going to play him in center field. And all of us are like, why? Why are you doing this? He always gets hurt. Leave him out of there when he got hurt. So that's kind of how it works. Let's hope he stays healthy, and we'll see how it goes. Let's talk Jake Berger here. I love Jake Berger. I've liked him in years past. 250, 34 bombs last year. But when he came over to the Marlins, looked like a brand new man, like released from the shackles of the White Sox. 303 average with 9 home runs basically in 2 months for Jake Berger. What's your thoughts on Big Jake? ADP of around 165 the last couple weeks.
If you miss out on power, you know Berger's got it. That's kind of the guy where, like, you don't have to worry about it. He is going to be set and forget type, I think. I do think Berger is, like, going to be 240 to 250, 30 home runs, and that's very realistic to expect. Path to better batting average. I believe Bloomfield mentioned on your podcast as well. Yep. The cutting down on the swing and miss, making more contact. That's, like, this a guy with this type of power. If he hits the ball more, it's going to work out in his favor for a better BABIPs, better batting average. And I believe Chu mentioned, see, I listened to your pods, Bubba, because I think Chu mentioned.
I love you.
I think Chu mentioned that this is like free promotion that he was talking about, because he looks at the, you know, he's big on the moving graphs and all this, the moving graphs, the what's it called? Graphs. Help me out here.
PLV graphs. The rolling graphs. Rolling graphs.
Rolling graphs. Thank you. Moving, rolling. Yeah, you get my point. I think they're useful. I think they're fun. I think they could tell a story if you catch the right trends in the right windows. And I think Chu did that with Berger, showing that he was making these changes and making these improvements prior to the Marlins. So the Marlins get the credit, even though he was already kind of moving towards that direction, which was nice to see. However, the Marlins, I feel like, have kind of, and you can see, they've gone a contact heavy approach. They went out and got guys that make a lot of contact. They went out and their prospects make a ton of contact. And it's one of those things where, like, Jesus Sanchez, we saw last year at times, kind of like, even though he has the power, there's a, and we'll talk about him a little bit. One of my frustrating things about him is that the ground ball rate went up, but I think that was at the expense of trying to make more contact and just get the ball and play more, because the power will play up naturally as he just makes more contact. So I think there's a little give and take here. Maybe that's the type of way they're kind of going about with their hitter development or their hitter approach, is like, hey, let's go ahead and make more contact, and the power will play up naturally for some of these guys. And we saw it for Berger. I don't know if, but the problem is Berger has that elite power skill set.
It's already built in, kind of.
Let's say he doesn't need to generate power so much as it's already there.
He just needs to generate more contact.
I think, yeah, more contact will help him regardless. So Berger's a guy that at cost, he's one of those guys, like, he's in that window of like, hey, do I need power? Sure, I'll go Berger. If I don't need power, I'm pivoting off Berger. Yep. You can go into a draft kind of like, hey, I know he's there. Him, other guys like him, Hoskins, Soler, they're all kind of going in this range. So you pick, what you got to do is you got to pick your favorite And you could build around an approach that, hey, I know I'm going to get a power guy here. Muncy a little behind these guys, so to speak. So he's right in that window of like, I can take power, or if I get power early, I'm going to pivot off him. I think that's kind of the approach you should go for him. I wouldn't bank on that, the batting average, but if he gives it to you, it's a plus type of thing. But Berger, I think he is what he is, and kind of going to be the he is what he is thing is going to be the thing for like most of these players on this list, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's kind of what the Marlins are. But yeah, with Berger, the one thing I like best is not just
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
The late power, which is so, like you mentioned some guys right there, but it gets fewer and far between, deeper in drafts, obviously. But with Berger, at a third base position that feels kind of more top heavy, but it just kind of opens up. He's a good one if you missed on some of those kind of earlier guys. He's a great one to circle, maybe jump around just to make sure you get a third baseman. And you can be, like you said, set it and forget it. And there's a lot to be said about that in drafts, but you just don't have to worry about it, dude. So I like that about him quite a bit. All right, you mentioned Luis Arraez going to lead off for the Fish. And this is a guy I never draft because he can score runs. He'll help you there, but all he does is basically hit for an elite average. Not going to knock that, but it's like a one-trick pony. He's basically a rabbit in batting average department for me, and I'm probably slandering him too much, but ADP of 161 over the last couple of weeks, going right before Jake Berger. So what's your thoughts on Arraez? Because I know a lot of people love him, and I'm in probably a minority, honestly, but I'm just not a fan.
So Arraez is one of those – he's a weird one. He's only played – he's never – gotten above 150 games in a season. It's 147 was his career high last year. Back-to-back batting titles. So in today's game, there's something to be said for that. But I still don't – I'm with you. I've never found myself intrigued by the draft costs. I don't like building teams that require them. I have one share, and it's in the Gladiator. And, of course, I took Schwarber because I had to do the typical Schwarber-Arraez combo. But those are both guys I expect to play a ton, hit a ton. And because Schwarber walks so much and Arraez doesn't, it's kind of a good balance, and they'll average out to being about, I don't know, 225-ish home run guys. And that's the thing. That's why it's like I hate taking him because he's a negative. I hate taking Arraez because he's a negative in a lot of spots in terms of, like, power and stolen bases. The counting stats are okay, not great. The Marlins aren't going to be a good team, so the runs will be there. But even last year, hitting at top of the lineup, playing his career-high games, he only had 71 runs. So Arraez isn't a guy that I would anticipate much more than 80 runs from. So he's kind of like the two category guy ish. I obviously one being a super elite category, but I hate the idea of like, hey, I'm taking Schwarber to make me stand out in power just for it to be like, yeah, now he's not a standout.
Yeah, now he's not a standout anymore. It's a great point that I think it's overlooked.
I don't like that. If I'm taking Schwarber, I understand the risk I'm taking, and batting average might be a dump, but at least I'll be a strength at something else. Whereas if Arraez for some reason, again, I would not expect him to hit under 300. He's done it once in his career, and it was 294 in 2021. So I don't expect Arraez to hit under 300. I do understand that it feels as confident, as safe as you can get for a 300 hitter. But it's still banking on a guy but we're talking about a guy that goes back to health now. Yeah, he's done back-to-back 144, 147 games played. But all it takes is for him to be closer to the 121 or less the 3 years before that. And now you're not even getting that. The elite carrying tool isn't carrying as much. So I don't know, man. He's not for me. He's for somebody. And he always seems to, the funny thing is Arraez always seems to be like, if you look at projections, and I haven't looked at SGP for him because again, he's almost off my boards and I hate to make anybody off my board, but Arraez has been. He's always a guy I feel like is underappreciated in drafts and always ends up earning more than we draft him to be. So he's always a net positive, but it doesn't matter to me because I don't care because he doesn't fit my roster builds. And I'm always caring about how my roster builds are. I could care less if a guy is a positive performer, if I don't know, or if I don't feel comfortable utilizing him and building around him appropriately.
Yeah. So, and that's the catch with Arraez. Like you mentioned, it takes the power away from Schwarber, and you can say the flip side. Now Arraez is just an average hitter at that and average wise. And it's also a great topic of conversation because a lot of us people like to reference, you know, dollars earned, which is usually a pretty strong part. Like when Acuña earns 70 something dollars. Well, yeah, that was pretty awesome. At the same time, you mentioned Arraez, he will earn his dollar value, but what he does for your fantasy team as a whole, does he really earn what you need on your team? That's the real question, because like I said, he's like a one-trick pony, and he's a consistent one-trick pony, a lot better than guys with steals that could get hurt and everything. But it's just one that, yeah, I'm with you. I've never been on team Arraez, and I've been okay with that. So I think I'll just keep riding that train. You mentioned Josh Bell earlier, probably a trade candidate. Makes a ton of sense, honestly. Last year, he hit 247 with 22 home runs between Cleveland and the Marlins. Got traded at the deadline, just like Berger did. And he hit 270 with 11 of those, half those home runs in 2 months with Miami. He played pretty well. I remember picking him up off the wire, using him in DFS. He similar to Berger, just, you know, he just new lease on life type stuff. Now, will that carry over? We'll see. But an ADP of 263, does Bell do anything for you? Does he ring your bell?
A little bit. Now we're going the opposite way of a guy that before last year hit 261 or better leading into last year. And we saw him again. We saw him hit closer to the 260 mark. It was obviously 270 and change while he was with Miami. So Josh Bell, you know what you're getting. Again, this is a guy that you just know what you're getting. He's always had elite plate discipline. The power has always been there. Like, the potential has always been there. Always strong hard hit rates. The barrel rate's always been good. Last year was actually better than average. 10% for the second time in his career. Last time he hit a barrel rate like that was back in 2019. So Josh Bell, the power is not a question. And everyone has to remember how his dad in the stands once, like how juiced his dad was, right? That's what comes to mind still to this day. But this is a guy that above average contact, below average chasing. He's creeped closer towards average swing and miss in the zone, the swing strike rate. I mean, not in zone, but in the swing strike rate, which I guess you have to assume strikes are in zone, right? Necessarily. But so it doesn't matter. It's my point being is that it's kind of like a good pro. It's a decent profile, one that feels rather safe. And Josh Bell kind of is like a, you know what? If you really waited on first base, you can get by with him starting, but he's better served as a corner infield in deeper formats. And anything shallower than 15, it's hard to roster him unless you have corner infield spots. But even then, there's more upside around him. There's more upside later. He's kind of best served for 15s, and that is a corner infield. I don't think he's ever going to hit that ceiling we saw. What was it? That magical half year? Was that 2019? Yeah, it was 2019. Of course, it was the juice ball year. Magical first half of the year that was like amazing, and that he just never lived up to it since. Kind of flashed a little bit close to that in 21. So I think 2021 might be the ceiling. So when you look at 2021 for Josh Bell, 261, 27 home runs, you know, decent, like 80 and 80 almost in the runs and RBI, a little less runs, a little more RBI. I think he can flip that batting second or third in this lineup. So good, a very good player, not great, nothing special, no carrying tool, at least consistent carrying tool. Potential for one, wouldn't bet on the home runs really being much more than 25-ish. And that's what projections have him, 23, 22, batting 258, 256, over 140 games. So I can see that. So if you add those few, so 142 games feels light considering he's played 156 and 150 the last 2 years. So you up that to 150, he'll be closer to that 25 home runs I was mentioning. Bingo. So at the end of the day, Josh Bell is Josh Bell. And
really he's another guy, though. It's just one of those where you kind of in a 15-team league, you just set it and forget it, corner infield or even late first base just for the 25 home. It sucks.
You just got to be careful. He's streaky. Yeah,
he's very streaky. That's why I kind of set it and forget it is what I'm saying, because in a roto, you just want the total end game. So don't try to play the streaks because you know how that goes. That usually ends poorly.
It's weird with him, though, because he could be streaky. It's like I've noticed with Josh Bell, because I've been a huge Josh Bell guy going back to 2018, 2019 when I was like getting into this. He was one of my first like breakout picks. Like I could go find the podcast or sleeper picks, whatever it was. Doesn't matter. It's a hilarious podcast. That was awful. And now it's not that I got much better. I'm just more comfortable talking. But in all seriousness, Josh Bell is he's one of those guys. I've seen him. He performs in bunches. Like last year, you mentioned how bad he was with Cleveland, how good he was with Miami. If you go back to Washington in 2021 or 2022, he split. I forgot what was Washington and who.
He went to San Diego, and San Diego did nothing.
So if you go
he
look was at the like splits,
non-existent.
He was great with Washington, awful with San Diego. So it's one of those things where it's almost like a first half, second half, and you can't tell which one's going to happen. But like last year was like normally it's been first half and second half fall off. Last year for Bell was the first half suck, second half took off. So, but it's almost like a full half at a time is what I'm getting at. That's so fair. Even though streaks, like you mentioned, it's impossible to get the streaks. It's one of those things where maybe you just ride
the larger samples of streaks, basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's and again, I doubt there's anything sticky about that. But I've just noticed like when he's on, and when Bell is off, he's off. So it's tough. You can't, like you mentioned, you can't time it. So you're better off kind of just keep riding the bad with the good because you don't know when the good's going to turn on and when the bad's going to stop. So.
Well, according to this outline here, this is bad, aka sucks. Avisail Garcia missed most of last season due to injury, ended up playing in 37 games, hit 3 homers, stole 2 bags, hit 185. And right now has an ADP of 693, even though he's projected to DH for the Marlins. Curlin, enlighten me why you're not a fan of Avisel Garcia. You're muted. You're muted.
Oh, my God. What a rookie mistake. So I wrote he sucks. That's why I was laughing, because he sucks. Like, he just was awful last year. He has some, like, okay, cool. The barrel rate was good last year. The hard hit rate was good. How much of that was that fact that he barely touched the field against righties after he got back from injury? How much of it was the injury just lingered all year? He's past his prime. He hasn't done anything since coming over to Miami. The 1 year that he was good in Milwaukee before leaving, he still did okay against righties, like a 780 OPS, which is serviceable, very good, good enough to start every day, you know. But since then, he hasn't put up, I don't think he's had 600 OPS as a whole, let alone versus either side of the ball, even against lefties. But at least I was looking at him last year. I have to go back. I'm mixed matching my players. I know he's been just terrible with Miami, period. Doesn't matter. But so last year, after returning on July 30th, he started against just 2 of the final 41 games against righties. I don't know how many of those games he missed day to day, or because I remember him kind of dealing with lingering issues, but still only 2 of the final 41 games against righties since returning from the IL. And he did play throughout those months, just sparingly, right? And that's a concern. And that was with a team that wasn't exactly like didn't have reasons not to play him. The Marlins lineup hasn't been anything to write home about, right? You have John Birdie playing every day. You have Jesus Sanchez playing every day, who's like hit or miss, or playing as right, I should say. Garrett Hampson was factoring in, getting playing time at times. Xavier Edwards would come in and out. Like, I don't understand how a guy that's I lack confidence in the playing time when they're making room for others and not him, and against righties anyway. So I don't know, man. I don't think there's a whole lot of upside there. Maybe he gets a shot to start against righties, and if he falters, it's a very short-lived one. So that stat, that really stood out to me. But maybe it is health-driven. So much swing and miss in that game. We're talking, like, I think the swing strike rate was like 15%. It was wild, like a really high. He was willing to chase too. So you can hit the ball as hard as you want, but if you're not hitting the ball, if the ball is not in the zone that you're hitting hard like that, you're gonna hit them, or maybe you're hitting them hard into the ground. I don't know. Avisel Garcia, though, is just not my cup of tea. I don't care at what cost it is. I don't know if the playing time is gonna be there all year, kind of thing. So I understand, like, well, in DC's, you know, he has playing time. Yeah, if you trust that he's not gonna platoon, I don't trust he doesn't platoon. Or maybe he doesn't right away. I just don't think that the Marlins are gonna give him a long leash. Maybe they will, because they want to trade him, but no one's gonna take that contract. You might get a bag of balls for him if you're lucky. Yeah. I don't know, man. Not a fan, and I don't see a relevant path to playing time the whole year, and that's why I don't predict him to start day one against righties. But that might be a little too pessimistic, I can admit. But I don't know, man. That trend, the way the end of the year, and when I see guys like Garrett Hampson and stuff getting playing time over you against righties of all play, all things,
that's not good.
That's like, why would I believe that you're suddenly going to start full time? And that's why I saw Ross Resource has him as a full time starter, and I'm like, I guess. And the spring training might tell us that too, so I'll change my tune. But even if he is a full-time starter, I still have no interest. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Now, the ADP is what interests me. Other than that, not a whole lot else does.
Well, so, let's see. I'll just give you names. I'm curious now, because, like, if I'm over here saying I'm not in on him, who am I in on? I have a Avisel Garcia going around 692 since then. I would have taken Jake Alou before the signing. I'll take Ramon Urias, because even though he's a part-time player, at least he's going to play 2-3 days a week, and he's on a better team. Gavin Sheets, that team is tanking. Why won't they play him against righties? I'd be surprised if he doesn't play 2-3. And I trust in the – like, I'd rather take guys on a per-plate appearance that might offer more than a guy that might get, like, five games a week, at least initially, and not do anything. Davis and De Los Santos for the Guardians – Rule 5 guy, I'll take him over Garcia. Joey Gallo, obviously he's going to move up, but that's an easy one. I understand it here, I guess. I don't know. I'm not usually just like, oh, there's actually a guy here on the Marlins I'll take who's not even up with the team. We'll talk about him later.
All right. Well, we'll get to him. Yeah. But let's get to Brian De La Cruz, who there were high expectations for last season. Comes in with in 153 games. It's 19 homers. It's 257. Still extremely young. And he's getting drafted around 284, which is nice, because, like, Parker Meadows is there, Chris Bryant, MJ Melendez. It's like your outfielders, Kepler, Buxton's even there as a util. Brian De La Cruz seems to be a guy continually improving each season. And I'm curious your thoughts on him. Is there another step in this? Are we in on Brian De La Cruz?
I have one share, so maybe I'm missing something. I know he underperformed his X stats, the X Woba most notably, like 21 points. So I think there is something there, a little more than last year. He hits the ball relatively hard, you know, 47% hard hit rate the year before, 42.5% the year we got last year. Good barrel rates, not great. You know, the one he spiked 11.9%, 8.8% carried over, which is solid, like good max EV. So the power potential's there. Elevates the ball rather well, 41% about ground ball rates each of the last two years for De La Cruz. So yeah, he doesn't, I don't know, man. There's something, it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't want to bank on it. So I think one of those guys where, like, let's see the projections or something, I'll probably trust on them. The 20 to 21 home runs is what they have him for, batting 262. It's almost like Josh Bell. Like,
hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
It feels like very Josh Bell. Like, I do think there's a path to more power potential. Then, like, I think he could be a mid-20s home run guy. I really do. He has a really good sweet spot percentage. So it's one of those things where he makes the quality of contact is kind of there for him. But still something that, man, I don't know. I feel like the expectations were a little too high. But his new price isn't, it's not bad.
It's affordable. It's definitely affordable, I think.
It's just a guy that I just haven't found myself all that in on. And I don't know why. Because, like I say, I got one share. I'm trying to find it. There it is. 284. Yeah. And that's a good price for him. But I feel like that's the problem. So he's going around guys like Parker Meadows, which upside is there's more upside there, but Byron Buxton, more upside there. A guy who could gain eligibility rather soon if they actually believe, and if you actually believe Buxton's going to stay healthy enough to play those 10 games in the outfield, because the team has mentioned he will be play the outfield this year. Nelson Velasquez, we all know the upside there. Tommy Pham. People might want to take a shot on him because he showed some power speed, and once he signs, that ADP is going to jump up. So it's just one of those things where there's so much potential here, and he kind of falls flat on that same level of upside. I think that's why he gets overlooked by me personally, but there's worse fifth outfielders out there because all these guys I just mentioned could bust. But then Max Kepler, I'll take him 10 times out of 10 over De La Cruz, but we all know my bias there for Max Kepler, a guy that consistently – I feel like Max Kepler and De La Cruz are the same player, but I feel like Kepler has a little more ceiling, and I feel like the track record's there, so maybe that's why I gravitate towards him. But I know the health is also more of a concern, so that's maybe why I shouldn't gravitate towards him. I don't know. I just wanted to give a few names of why I don't end up with him, because I can sit there and be like, yeah, I don't like him, but like, let me look at why. Oh, it's not so much De La Cruz as much as it is the options around him I prefer.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. That's a very valid point. It always comes down to who else is getting drafted. So I do appreciate that. Let's talk Jesus Sanchez, who you kind of hinted at earlier as a kind of a frustrating piece, because we've seen signs of like it could be really fun and then other signs. Like, hit 253, 14 homers in 125 games. You look like the barrel rate was great. The hard hit rate was pretty solid as well. So you're sitting there going, what are we doing here? He's got an ADP of 374 over the last couple weeks. Are we getting back in on Jesus Sanchez, or is there still some concern there?
It's the fact that I think Sanchez, what we saw last year, is kind of what we should expect. He made a point to make more contact. He was going opposite field. I remember reading something that was like, that was by design. He's still just 26 years old. And, 240, it's just one of those things where he's much better served as a fab guy for deeper leagues. Like, he'll be, I guarantee you, he'll be on my team a time or two over next year as a streamer, because he's going to get hot. He'll hit against, you know, he hits against righties. He'll play 5 out of 6 against righties. So he's a guy that you will plug in, and he can do that in DCs too. I love seeing the 12% barrel rate. That's 2 out of 3 years. It's been at least 12%. The hard hit rate being I would call it career best, because the one that's higher is like a 14 event measure. So we'll call it a career best 46.3% hard hit rate for Sanchez. But when I mentioned he hits more contact now, the ground ball rate spiked to nearly 50%, 49.4%. So if you're not elevating the ball, and he didn't pull the ball as much, 34.9% pull rate was the lowest of his career. He was an all fields guy. So it goes back to ground balls went up, all fields approach, 30%, at least 32% to all fields. His power won't play. He has natural power that he can clear the park no matter which side of the park he hits it to, no matter what park it's in. But you can't tap into it fully if you're not pulling it, right? So the ball, he's scattering the ball all the way around. He's hitting more ground balls. Those aren't reasons to believe that Sanchez will suddenly tap into that power. But at the same time, if he goes back to selling out for power again, do we see the the batting average plummet. So there's give and take here. They're still swing and miss in the game. And I don't know. Sanchez is just a guy that he's just a guy. And I think he is better to try to grab in when you're, you know, riding out streamers in 15 team fab leagues. But DC's, I guess, because he's a healthy body on a team that's not making moves. So the playing time should be rather secure, at least for, you know, the strong side of a platoon. I don't want to get my hopes up dreaming on what could be, because we saw a change in approach. So even though Sanchez has the power skills, I just don't know if that change in approach carries over. I don't know if the power will ever really come through the way we want it to.
That's true. That change of approach will zap the power. We've seen a lot of guys do that. We always get frustrated with it, but in real life baseball, might be for the better for Sanchez. So I guess we'll see how that plays out. Anybody else of interest for you? Like, everyone always loves John Birdie when he plays. He runs forever, but how often is he going to play? You mentioned Xavier Edwards. Curious your thoughts there, because I like him as a late-round potential steals dude. So who are a couple guys we might need to keep an eye on?
So I think Xavier Edwards has an easy path to playing time. I could see him starting day one in right field over a guy like what's his face I mentioned earlier that I hate, Garcia. My Garcia hate is so bad to a point where it's like I want to see Xavier Edwards, just because Edwards is Luis Urias-esque. I will not ever say anyone's the next Luis Urias, because if he's batting 300, that's absurd. But if there is a player to do it or be close to, like a 280, 290 hitter, I think Edwards has that profile. The hit tool is legit, makes a ton of contact. No, like the swing and miss, like he has such a great eye for the zone. Edwards is a guy that could easily hit for high average, and that this is a team that seems to really like that. So why wouldn't they give him a chance to play? They were getting him ready to play the outfield last year. He could definitely be more of a util type, because I could see him bouncing, you know, infield, John Birdie outfield. I think John Birdie has a regular role. He's another guy I really like this year. Birdie, it's like a really fun fact. I think he was like top 10 in ISO the final month of the year, or top three or top five. It was something stupid that's not going to sustain, but just a fun stat. Like, John Birdie tapped into a little power that I don't see that being there. But I think Birdie's playing time is the most secure it's been in like 3 years, and no one cares. Nobody wants him. And when you look at this team, I don't think Brujan's going to supplant him for playing time. I don't think Edwards will supplant him for playing time. I don't think Garcia will get in the way of his playing time. I think Birdie might not play every single day, but I see Birdie being a guy that plays 5 out of 6, 5 out of 7 games rather easily for this team, the way it's laid out. A guy that they might want to build that trade value up for as well, considering he's a free agent 2026. So we're talking about a $2.125 million player. So very affordable piece for a winning team. So like a team like the Dodgers could easily be like, hey, you know what? Miguel Rojas isn't working out, which is also a former Marlin. Or hey, Chris Taylor isn't working out, but John Birdie's there, very affordable. Not that they need to save money, but we're talking about a guy who's very affordable, a great util type for a team that could be contending. I could see them trying to build that by letting him play it out and showing that like he's more than just the util type for some teams. But imagine having a guy who hit, like, if John Birdie was able to hit as well as he hit last year, or has been, you know, in terms of an asset for a team that's competing, I think that has value. So I think the Marlins could easily be like, hey, let's showcase him. And that's kind of where my head's at with Birdie. So that's why I'm in on Birdie then. And like I said, I like Edwards, because I think Edwards can carve out a larger role than we anticipate sooner than later, if not from day one. It really is going to depend on what the team wants to do with Garcia. I really think they're going to want to try to see what Garcia has left. Yeah. I just don't trust Garcia to do anything. So maybe I'm hinging a lot of this belief on Garcia being toast.
Yeah, it would have to be a toast thing, because I think they will give Garcia a pretty good leash, I'd imagine.
They shouldn't,
but again, you know, I think they will, just because they want to be able to trade him if he can get anything going. But I hope Edwards gets his chance. I'm with you 100% there. The Birdie take, I never thought of it the way you just described it, and it makes a lot of sense, actually, that he should get plenty of run and either get traded or something else will happen, because they really don't have a guaranteed shortstop at the moment. So that's a very good point, that playing time should be pretty solid, at least out the gate for Birdie, which should relate in a ton of stolen bases and whatnot. So I do like that. I need to get a little more attention to Birdie on draft day now.
And he's third base, shortstop eligible.
That's tremendous. Corner infield, middle infield, that
in the reserve rounds.
Yep, that's really, really nice. That's a good call. I need to keep an eye on that a little more. All right, let's head to the bump. Let's talk about one of my favorite pitchers on the entire season. I have a lot of shares of this man. I know you like Jesus Luzardo as well, so I'm not going to say he's my guy, because you've been on Jesus for a little bit. He was really solid last year, 3.58 ERA, 178 innings, which I love to see. Strikeouts were there. Kept improving as the season went on is what I love to see, the velocity and everything. So I'm big on Luzardo taking that step to acehood this season, and an ADP around 79 the last 2 weeks. I will gobble that up all day long. So what's your thoughts on Lizardo in 2024? And if I'm wrong, please tell me.
No, I still really like Lizardo. I have a few shares. I like him and Eflin, so they go the same range of drafts. So I've mixed and matched those two as like an SP3, honestly, because I like those two a lot.
Could we say Lizardo maybe ceiling Eflin safer?
I don't see why not. I just think it's one of those things where I can see Lizardo taking a step forward in strikeouts as well. Again, I mean, here he did. I think he can sustain that. It's the whip, man. The guy had a 1.21 whip, and I remember that being a killer. It pissed me off every year, or all year. I was just watching, and it came with a 311 BABIP. Can he fix that a little bit? But the problem is he's always kind of been a higher BABIP guy, but last year was the first year we saw the skills really come full. So can he, and it goes back to this team. I mean, Bell at first base, Birdie, if he's your shortstop, like this outfield, the outfield's not the best defensively. I don't know how much more, like, I don't expect the BABIP to get much better. This team doesn't feel like a team that's going to be a great defensive. Berger at third base, I don't think he's the best glove. Last time, I remember that being an issue in the past anyway. I don't know what to expect from this. That's why the whip scares me. That's the only thing that leaves me concerned about, like, can we get the best out of him while he's in Miami, or is he traded to a contender with a good defense and now suddenly the whip comes down a little bit because the strikeouts are there. He's not really walking a ton of people. A 7.4% walk rate isn't that bad. It's I don't know. There's a lot to like here. I think Jesus Lizardo, if I stop eating my words or my letters, I think he still has a smaller step that he can still take, which again, because I'm saying smaller step because he already took such a big one last year. I think Lizardo could easily be like, if there's a guy that goes like in that range that turns into a top two round pick, would be him, right? Like Lizardo could take that Pablo Lopez step. If he, it's a matter of getting that whip down. That whip comes down, I think the results improve across the board. And I don't, that's the only thing, but it's a big if, obviously, right? So I think Lizardo, where you're getting him, very solid. I like him. I view him as rather safe personally. I'm with, I think you and I agree there. And there's people were taking Yuri Perez over him. I couldn't get behind that. I think we're seeing a little bit. I've seen it shift a couple times in a few drafts, and I think that's appropriate because I think Yuri Perez, although has a higher ceiling than Lizardo, I really do think he does. We're also banking on Perez taking that big step forward this year, right? That Lizardo took last year, and we saw Perez. And I'm kind of just going right into him because I know he's kind of the next one. So I kind of took your job there, right? Just kind of shifted into him. That's a great transition I've ruined by pointing out and transitioning. But yeah. Perez is a guy that I think we saw how good he can be. But we also saw him. I think what we saw was him getting tired on the stretch and him kind of 100%. Flaming out. And when we saw him flame out, we saw Perez flame out. We saw how the stats and everything regressed rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that he'll start off super, like he'll start off great. Perez is gonna be such a good pitcher, and then what happens when he has to hit the new innings max again? Well, we see the
same. He only threw 128 last year between AAA and the big, so what's he maxing out at? 150, where Lizardo can get to 200.
Well, Lizardo, we all thought Lizardo would be maxed out last year too, remember? Like that was a big thing. We thought 150 was the ceiling for him, and the Marlins said nope, go get your innings, buddy, because he the year before at the major league level, I'd have to look at the minor league level, but the year before, 2022 for Lizardo, let's see the innings pitch. It was like 112, basically.
So he jumped.
And he went from 112 to 178. Yeah. So I think going from 120 to 150, 160 is pretty safe bet for Perez. So I think the innings are going to be there. I think I'm more afraid of like the fatigue, and we saw the performance with the fatigue last year. I'm afraid of Perez kind of hitting that wall, and then the performance when the fatigue hit, and we saw that production take a huge swing the other direction. So maybe Perez is great for 2/3 of a year, and that's fine. Then at that point, you got what you wanted out of him. But are you really ever going to sit him down the stretch? It would take like 3 or 4 bad starts for you to be like, all right, maybe he's a more streamer now. Because I remember Lizardo was getting to that point where it's like, I remember sitting him because we couldn't trust him because he had 2 or 3 bad outings, lost the velo, lost the movement a little bit on some of the pitches, and then found his groove again to end the year. So Perez could easily fall into that thing again, whereas I think Lizardo's built up more. So that's why, if there's a difference, I think Lizardo, that's where I feel safer with Lizardo. He kind of went through those growing pains, whereas Perez has one more year of growing. And then Perez could easily be the better pitcher. That's why there's really not much for argument if you prefer Perez over Lizardo. I think my argument comes to Lizardo has a pretty good ceiling himself with already having done the innings jump. So that's where I'm at with the two of them. And I think they're both really talented pitchers.
It's pretty interesting because Perez goes one pick before Lizardo. So
now he does. Before it was like almost around it. Like it's slowly, I'd have to look, but I remember it being like every time it's like I'd be up the pick and I'm like, why is Lizardo going this much farther behind Yuri? And I think everyone else kind of started feeling that way. And now you're seeing Yuri and him. And I think they do belong right by each other.
That's fair.
But I think it's more so Jury came down than Lizardo moved up. I think that's the
biggest differentiating factor is can Jury handle the workload, like you said, like Lizardo did last year, because Lizardo kept that velocity going towards the end. If Jury can do that, he can probably surpass Lizardo. So it's just
such a big if after seeing him flame out the way he did the end last year. And I know, trust me, I get it. Full off season coming in as a starter, blah, blah, blah. You know, starter's workload. I think he can handle at least 150, but 150 might be all you need for him to return. He'll return value at 100 games. So if people are worried about innings, I wouldn't be. If Lizardo's usage is any indication of what they're willing to do with a pitcher, I think Yuri's safe for innings. I think 150 is like the low end, not the max. And I think people might be viewing him as a 150 max guy. And I think that's unless only injury would, I think only injury would allow him, would stop him from going above 150.
I agree. Braxton Garrett, a lot of expectations on him last year, and he came through in a big way, I think. About 160 innings almost, 3.66 ERA. Strikeouts weren't bad, almost a K per inning. Whip 1.15. As a whole, I call it a win with Braxton Garrett. He had a few issues after the blister that did kind of derail things, but he was locked in for quite a stretch of time there that made him like an ace.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
I'm a fan of going back to the well here. ADP of around 179 seems pretty nice when it's like Christian Javier, Hunter Brown. I got Garrett, Bryce Miller, who's I like too. Shane Bieber, though. Like I like Miller in that range, kind of.
I like Miller in that range too, but I also like Garrett too.
I like Garrett a lot.
I've mixed and matched in this range, and like right now, I actually should probably check. I know I'm close to being up in the draft, and he's still kind of lingering there. And Garrett's the type of guy that it depends on how I build up my rotation. Like right now, I built it out. This one in particular has Reagans, Pivetta. And those are guys I'm like, oh, those shouldn't be my 3 and 4. So like Garrett's like a perfect 5 on that team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's 100%. Like that's the type of guy that I'm like. That's how I view Braxton Garrett. He's almost like what you draft Stroman for in the past. You know, a guy that you're just kind of setting in there. He'll be a roster stabilizer of sorts, or rotation stabilizer, if you will. And the wins will be. I can't forget how many. I remember that bullpen, and we'll get to them in a minute. They weren't bad, but I swear they blew every Braxton Garrett win or every Lizardo win. It wasn't Puck alone the reason behind Lizardo losing 5 wins or something crazy? It was a weird, crazy stat.
That wouldn't shock me, because I remember you
texting
about Puck just going downhill.
Puck pissed me off, because he would just leave one sweeper that hung, and then that thing got deposited like 15 rows into any like side of the field. And that is just so frustrating, because Puck has stuff too, but yeah, we'll get to him shortly. But Braxton Garrett's just kind of he's a solid safe. I feel like the floor is there. I wouldn't expect ceiling type of thing. Innings won't be a concern, might get traded. And he's easily a guy that can be traded to a contender without a doubt by midseason. But regardless of where he's pitching, I think that skill set plays up. We saw Garrett change his pitch mix last year. We saw the velo increase a little bit. And I think those are things that kind of help at least help justify why you could buy the breakout and why you should buy it continuing. He's more of a finesse pitcher, hits the spots, can hit his spots pretty well. And does what he does. So I think Garrett is a very safe guy. I think he's just, like you mentioned, why not? If you built out kind of a riskier mid, like I just mentioned Reagans and Pivetta being very, in my opinion, pretty risky to kind of have as your 3 and 4, Garrett makes a lot of sense on that team. So stuff like that. It's kind of a very roster construction type of guy.
100%. No, I think there's another layer to Garrett potentially too. So I'm a fan of seeing where that can go if he can find it. Edward Cabrera, this is a guy that, you know, before Yuri, before Garrett, even before Lizardo, it felt like we thought Cabrera would be the dude, and this has not panned out. Walks continue to be a tremendous problem with Cabrera, almost over 15% walk rate last year. Strikeouts are great, though. Still has an elite strikeout stuff. It's just one of those, please stop walking people and we can survive. It's just, do you want to take that risk? Right now, ADP is close to 300. I haven't been able to take that risk. I know the ceiling is like really high, where that floor is. Bottom of the barrel, like the floor is lava with Edward Cabrera. So what's your thoughts here?
That's exactly it. We've seen him walk the yard. We've seen him get by without walking anybody. Like I'm looking at like his game log last year, June 22nd, 13 Ks, no walks. And then this is the same guy that will give you like but three walks over 3 1/3 or 3 1/2. Like, it's just one of those things where it's the walks just crush them, and they come in bunches. Like, we'll see him get by a few starts. We're like, okay, no walks. Then suddenly he loses the command for a couple starts, and then he gets it back. And when he gets the starts back, when he gets command back, he flourishes. So very much a guy that you can't bank on with any sort of consistency. And he's changed his pitch mix up. He's done different. Like, Cabrera's done things to like kind of address it and like try different things, and nothing stuck. And I think it's one of those things where it's just one of those rides that you have to ride. And if you want to take a shot, but I think he's still more firmly in that streamer tier for me. Like, a guy that I don't want him making up the back end of my, I don't want him to be the back end guy in 15s, because I don't want to have to depend on him. Like, he scares me to have to be at the, like, to depend on him. But with that said, I think there's few that have the ceiling he has in that range. You know, you have guys like Waka, Mackenzie Gore. These are guys going around Edward Cabrera, for reference. Luis Severino, who you can argue the ceiling's there. Tyone, more of a floor guy. So Chris Paddock. Like, these are the names you're putting up him up against. So I have no problem with him being in that range. I just remember the frustration watching as a fan. I didn't really have him anywhere. I was just watching him. Dude, he could be dominant. And he could be dominated. And I feel like it felt very often that there was no in between. There was no like, eh, that was okay. So, Edward Cabrera, I think there's reason that for optimism in terms of just looking at the skills, but there's also a reason for like, oh, he could be a multi-inning reliever at times. Like, he could just like, oh no, man, aggravating.
It's annoying. That's why I just kind of stay away. I don't want to deal with that. I think in a fab league, you can maybe take a stab and just drop him if it's bad. In a draft and hold, you're stuck with him. And that's like almost a dead roster spot if he's not taking a turn. So,
I was looking at the wrong game logs, by the way, for that 13 strikeout thing. It was, I thought that looked funny. It was a 12 strikeout thing against Chicago for what it's worth. But that's,
I remember the game. I remember
that 12 strikeout outing came with 5 walks in that, but so it's like, it was Oakland 10 and 1, but it was Oakland, right? Yep. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, there's games where he walked more than he struck out. That's aggravating. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't know. Although I was like, I'm looking at these game logs, I'm like, those are the wrong game logs. I was definitely like, the wrong game logs. I was like, there's no way, because I'm like, yeah, he walks way more than that.
It happens. Let's talk some Trevor Rogers here, a guy I liked quite a bit last year, but he just could not get back from injury. And I really don't know where his head's at. They're saying he's going to be healthy, and so I got to trust that, I guess, to an extent. But we only saw 18 innings last year between the bigs and the minors, I believe. He got a whole 9 innings in the minors. So 27 innings last year from Trevor Rogers, ADP of 340. I'm just kind of staring at him on drafts and moving on at the moment, Kerwin.
So I dove into him a little more, and that was more so like self-serving, because I'm like, I feel like I kind of see him, and he's there with Frankie Montas, he's there with Dean Kramer, Sean Manaea, and I'm like, Rogers, I think Rogers has the inside shot to get in that fifth spot, assuming he's healthy. And then you start looking at the numbers, you're like, oh, I can see it. I can kind of see it. Small sample, more sinkers, less four-seamers last year led to like a career best 37% O-swing, but you mentioned such a small sample that how much of that can we really take away from that? But he did that while still keeping that swing strike rate right around league average, I think a little better actually. So, and the whiff rate being mediocre as well. So it was like he's not really getting the whiffs in the zone maybe, but he's getting people to chase. So there's something there that was working for chases. However, he still couldn't get the strikeout. Like, he still couldn't get the the ERA below 4. So it's one of those things where it's like, you can kind of see, like, if you squint the right direction, the sun's glaring on the screen, not glaring on the screen, you can kind of see it type of thing. But it's one of those things where it's like, I see him as a streamer type for sure early on. He could, if he was this year's Braxton Garrett in terms of not necessarily the same exact skill set, but more so like the guy you pick up early off waivers and contributes, none of us would be surprised. And it's one of those things where that's where he's going to be. I feel like he's going to be that guy that's like week one of fab, week two of fab. When he goes out, has a decent start, you pick him up as a cheaper starter that's like, maybe he has staying power. I think that's the upside there. Like, the kind of guy that could have that year, like, he's good enough to be a bench streamer. I think that's kind of where you can look at Trevor Rogers and see that. But it's one of those things where there was something there, a little something. Like, I was excited, and now it's like, I think there's just the apprehension because he can't stay healthy. And I think that's where the frustration comes. Like, sure, you could squint and see some of these changes in 18 innings last year, but it's only 18 innings. How would teams have adjusted? Would Trevor Rogers have sustained it? And like, I don't know, man. It's just such a small sample. And we're talking, even with all these little changes, all these little fun things to look at in his profile, a 405 Sierra, four ERA. Pretty much the four ERA was earned, but the 52% ground ball rate is very interesting. The fact that he was able to get his ground ball rate to spike like that. Like, maybe, like, that's why I'm like, there's something that was kind of there. I don't know. I don't have a lot of optimism. I don't think there's a high ceiling. I just think maybe that there's a chance, there's a path to being Garrett-ish. Yeah. I don't want to use the, because the skill sets aren't the same. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying, like, the usefulness is what I'm trying to comp here.
Yeah, I think at best it's a streamer right now. I got to see a lot more health wise from Rodgers to trust him at all. So
you can go Steven Matz. Steven Matz is going.
I like Steven Matz a lot right there. So
I just remember Steven Matz being really bad then really good again. Like,
God, really, so yeah, really good, and then he got hurt. So I'd rather take that chance though. At least we saw innings out of Steven Matz. That's all I'm worried about is longevity.
Clark Schmidt.
Right now, I've always been a Clark Schmidt guy. I wish he could strike out more people. I really do, because everything else is pretty nice with Clark Schmidt. So. Let's talk bullpen. Tanner Scott led the way to end things out there. That was pretty impressive, all things considered. He's always been like a late draft and hold guy in years past because he would get his chances once in a while, but it actually panned out in 2023. I know Rob McCabe, who does a lot of fab work on OCs and whatnot, said he was the most valuable fab acquisition on winning teams last year in 12-team OCs. That is Tanner Scott. So what's your thoughts on Tanner Scott, who starts the season with the job, but there are the AJ Pucks, there are the other players in that bullpen that could be there to supplant him at any moment?
Yeah. I think he's on an expiring contract. So I don't think he's on the team by the end of the year anyway. So he might not even lead this team in saves come because of midseason. He could easily be dealt, or he'd be dealt before the season starts. It wouldn't surprise me. They have so many lefties as well, yes, but that's the thing. So the good thing is they have so many lefties. I think they have four in that bullpen. And because of that, I don't think being a lefty matters here. Yeah, he's a free agent at the end of this season. So he's an arbitration last year of ARB, and then he's a free agent. The Marlins aren't going to re-sign him. I just don't see it happening. So I think he becomes an instant trade candidate. And if he's not traded in the offseason, which wouldn't surprise me if he was, he could be traded early on in or by midseason type of thing, just because if he shows out doing just as well for half a year, he becomes a very valuable trade asset for the Marlins, a team that, again, I talked about that at the beginning of the show, what I expect them to do over the next few years, right? Just from what I'm seeing, the type of moves they're making, whatever. So Scott might not be the team's save leader by the end of the year, or I guess in half a year he can probably still be, but you get my point. Like, we're drafting him. I've gotten away from him. I was really in. The price kind of shot up, and I got out. And I think you can still get 20 saves out of the guy. So that's really a solid guy. But I'm afraid that he gets traded as a lefty to a team that's competing, right? So they either have a guy who's set in the role, or they can use him as more traditional lefty out of the pen, where he might factor into it, but might be more of a high leverage guy now, 7th, 8th inning, where he's been in the past. So lack of track record of success like this, I feel like it's kind of been intermittent at times. And then the fact that he's easily a trade target, I don't see how he doesn't get traded. I'm trying to talk myself in the ways that he doesn't get traded, and you really can't, you know, considering the Marlins where they're at. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of optimism beyond the first half of the season. And even then, it's like I just can't get behind the price, because I feel very strongly that he's not saving games in the second half, especially if he gets traded to a contender.
Yeah, and that was very much the likelihood, I'd imagine. And then you got these other options in the back of the bullpen, two guys I've been looking at in drafted hold league. So why don't you discuss AJ Puck and Andrew Nardi. Nardi's a dude I've been drafting a ton at his price tag.
Yeah, see, I have no Nardi, and that's probably a mistake. And I'm actually the one who put the name on here too. So that's the funny part. Yeah,
when I saw that, I was like, I got a lot of Andrew Nardi. And
yeah, because Nardi looked gnarly. Hey,
yeah, he was a Nardi boy.
He's a Nardi boy. I like it. Nardi he's always shown like the strikeout stuff in the minors. But the difference was last year, he kind of got the walks under control, still walked too many for your liking, you know, 3.3 walks per nine, not ideal, but it's under 10%, which is nice. At the 21.9% K minus walk rate. So the strikeouts are there, which is important, especially being a lefty. And I think that why not give him a shot? I mean, 13.5% swing strike rate, 34.8% O swing. Those are better than league average for reference. The league average being 11.1% swing strike rate and 31.9% O swing. So he's getting chases and he's getting swing and miss in this, for strikes on his strikes. I don't see why you don't, like, why wouldn't he have a shot to close games? Again, it goes back to this team having a plethora of lefties. So it's not like him being a lefty is a problem. He's one of the three that we're naming, and AJ Puck is just an obvious name that I feel like he's obviously the next man up, but then again, could he be a multi-inning guy? They talked about building Puck up as a starter.
Especially with Trevor Rogers.
I don't know why Puck is being discussed as a starter when he can barely hold the workload of a closer or a reliever. It's a lot of sarcasm there. It's just frustrating that the Marlins are even talking about it. I get it. Puck was a former top pitching prospect. That's not really an argument. And a team that you want the Marlins, if the Marlins are going to develop a player, you want that player, right? So Puck, very intriguing as the idea of a starter, but I don't think that's a realistic outcome. And if he is, was he a 4 to 5 inning guy, starts maybe 20 games in the year, goes back to a multi-inning role to help build him up? I don't know. So if he's being talked about as a starter, I'm curious to see the usage. Is it more of a multi-inning guy out the gate, builds up throughout the year? And if so, then that kind of takes him out of the closing role, but he could be useful as a multi-inning guy. He could be pitching a lot of those 5, 6, 7 innings, maybe be in line for a lot of like maybe 6 or 7 wins, like a sneaky wins target. If he's doing that multi-inning role right behind the starters, even, or if like close games or whatever it might be, because the Marlins are going to win close games more than likely than any, if they win anything. And Nardi just being a guy that we saw the skills there for him. And I think there's a path for him getting saves, especially in the second half.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely with you. I think it's a, like I said, at his ADP right now, which over the last 2 weeks is 570. Like, I'll take that all day as a depth piece in end draft and holds. Like, that's the kind of guys I live for in those forms. Like, he's a Griffin Jacks that no one talks, or not as many people talk about.
And that's, well, you're welcome then. I'm glad we could bring him up today.
Yeah, no, you did well. You did well. You earned your spot again next year if you wish to take it.
I can definitely, if I can't make it, I have a few guys that are really, really good Marlins guys.
I know.
Probably make, better than me, honestly.
You'll make it because you love to talk to me. So
I just love talking.
Yeah. So last but not least, well, I guess I can ask you one thing, if you can be quick with this. What is, are there any starting pitchers we should be looking at that aren't up yet? Now, we'll get to prospects, don't get me wrong, but like, is there a long review? Are there guys that we've seen before? Because we've talked about already Trevor Rogers probably not having a lot of innings in him. Edward Cabrera could suck again if and that could cause problems. Who would be kind of the next guys up to keep an eye on or maybe take late stabs at?
I feel like Sixto is the obvious name. I have no interest in that, though. That's just the name that comes to mind instantly.
It is the obvious name, yes, but no.
Ryan Weathers, he's shown flashes in the past for San Diego.
That's a good one. Like, at least he's done it before, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's shown flashes. We've seen Weathers find success at times in bunches. Like last year, I remember looking out like, oh man, this guy has a back before, I think before Barnes got him, he was very like useful, and he was like a 3 or 4 start stretch where I'm like, this guy could actually be a streamer. And then I put a couple dollars, I put like $1
ADP on him. ADP of 742. That's actually pretty good for a dude that's probably, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets at least 10 starts.
That's the thing. He's easily this, like, he could easily be the sixth man. He's actually in contention for the fifth fifth starter role, while also like between him, Max Meyer, Trevor Rogers, AJ, apparently AJ Puck, but I don't believe it.
AJ here Puck was, yeah, so not need to be
it was starter. It was the first 3 starts of the year back in April. It was a five innings, six innings, only giving up 200 runs or less in each one. That was the, I remember this. I was looking at him, I'm like, man, he's, and one of those was against Atlanta. So I was like, this guy is really showing something, like, but none of the underlying stats bought it. And then he kind of just bottomed out from there. He just, up until his very final start of the year, right, where he showed up against Pittsburgh, which again, everyone was in the second half. So wouldn't read too much into it. But Ryan Weathers just being a guy that there was prospect pedigree there too, but I believe at one point, because I remember buying a card of his back when I was into buying cards.
His father was a former MLB pitcher. So
I'm sorry?
His father was a former MLB pitcher. So,
and he was a 7th overall pick.
Yep. There was a lot of expectations from him.
So, yes, and if there's a team that you want him to have a full offseason with, it's the Marlins, right? The Marlins
To be fair, we could say there's high expectations for Cal Quantrill as well, but we know how that's going.
Well, now they're mile high.
Mile high, yes. I love you so good.
such a dad.
But yeah, as long as Weathers can weather the storm with the fifth man in the rotation, he should get some starts as well.
There it is.
All right, talk prospects with me here, because if there are trades, if there are screw-ups along the way, it's going to come from the youth to help things out, because they're not going to go sign anybody probably. So what prospects are we looking at?
Max Meyer is the obvious one. I mean, I think he's firmly in the mix for the fifth starter role. So I don't think there's much that needs to be said about him. I think I've heard rumors of like reliever risk in the past with him, just because of this. I think he's like a smaller stature and kind of like, I think he was lacking a third pitch at the time. He was 24 years old still, so a third overall pick. I doubt they're going to not let him have a chance to start, obviously. I just think long-term there could be some reliever risk. I think that was a concern with him. He is only 6 foot tall, 196, at least that's what he's listed on Fangraphs. So 6 foot tall. You know how there's all that talk around what's his face? They just came over from Asia. Yamamoto. Jeez. Yamamoto. All that talks about shorter pitchers, blah, blah, blah. Well, Max Meyer's kind of one of those guys. He'll be 25 this year, right before the year starts. So, again, a guy that's probably not going to spend a whole lot of time in AAA, if any. And I don't see why he can't come up and have an impact. So Max Meyer is a guy that I have a few shares to. Not a guy I must get, but a guy I like to take a shot on. But one guy I have one share of, and I keep forgetting about him because he just kind of sits there. And he's not on the 40 man. He's like a no-name guy. It's Troy Johnston. And I honestly was like, who is this guy? And I saw his ADP was like 740. I'm like, who is this guy? So I took a shot. Now, he might have simply taken advantage of being 26 years old at AAA. Like, that could have been a big part of it. But between AA or AAA last year, if you look him up on Fangraphs, the guy put up 26 home runs and 24 stolen bases. And he only got caught stealing twice out of those two. Consistently puts up sub 20% strikeout rates, which is what you love to see with guys like this. Double-digit walk rates at a couple stops over the last couple of years. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, is he just overperforming the level because of his age? That's the only thing I can think of. Because the guy just put up some, like, video game type numbers for somebody I've never heard of. And oh, by the way, he plays first base. Like, what? What first baseman do you know has 20-20 potential, right? And I'm not saying he's going to do that, but you see the play approach numbers. Now, obviously, a high BABIP in AAA last year, but a pretty realistic one at 319. And the guys, he's been carrying, like, oh, 381 is a high BABIP for sure, but he's always carried 330, 350, these BABIPs throughout the minor league level. So he's obviously, the speed's legit, so I guess the high BABIPs can sustain the guy. He had decent barrel rates, if memory serves, too. I was looking into more decent contact rates in the zone, but again, how much of that was just taking advantage of being older for the levels? Regardless, it's a Marlins team that Josh Bell could be on the move. They don't really have another first baseman. Troy Johnston could be a guy we see be relevant-ish, and I have one share. A guy that I probably should get more. It's just one of those things where it's like Joey Votto goes around there. Why would I take him over Joey Votto is my problem, or him over Joey Gallo, which Gallo's going to move up. So it's one of those things where Johnston just never made the cut because I don't really have a whole lot of expectations out of him. I don't expect the Marlins to let him. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I don't know what to expect, but I know what Joey Votto is. So it's like, why would I? So it keeps coming down to, why am I taking this unknown upside versus Joey Votto, who probably gets a decent amount of run if he signs with the team, which there's multiple teams interested. So we're talking about a guy that's like non-existent, honestly. And I even wrote who, because I was like, I never heard of him. Yeah, so I just haven't.
I never heard of him. I just looked at James Anderson's team by team, like top 20, and he's 18th out of the top 20 on the Marlins. But he's on a list.
He's not on a list anywhere else, like at least on Fangraphs.
Yeah, so James is looking at him. That's why I like, see, Fangraphs, the one thing is it's a good list, but like Longenhagen's more real life than fantasy. So you have to kind of work through all that. Where James is straight up, this is my fantasy list.
And here's the thing. The thing is James has him as the 18th best prospect on the team for fantasy purposes. He's probably going to see playing time. And in a DC, that's kind of what you're targeting. Because it goes back to the fact that he's 26 years old. He's not going to be in the minors all year if he shows any. There's no reason to.
Without stealing all of James' work, he's only the second first baseman on this list. So there's not many options there.
That's what I'm getting. This team. If you just look at the roster, you realize they don't have options. They don't have a whole lot. So one injury to Bell, which we've seen Bell get hurt here and there. The guy just starts off hitting well because they want to give him a shot because why not? I mean, they don't exactly have any reason not to give him a shot. Let's see, who's the DH right now for them? Oh, Jesus Sanchez. We've seen Sanchez suck. What if Sanchez sucks again? And Troy Johnston is a lefty as well. So that could be easily a platoon guy. We bring him up, platoon him. It's just one of those things where there's plenty of paths to playing time here. And I don't have enough shares of him. I don't expect to. Now that I've talked about him, I expect other people to be in on him because that's just how it works. People don't know about him. I didn't know about him until I saw him. And I still haven't. Again, it's hard to take him over Joey Votto, but maybe I'll build around this because I like the profile, but I feel like it's too good to be true because Marlins can't develop hitting. So there's definitely something missing here. Oh, he's 5'11", 205. So he's not even like an overly tall guy with a big strike zone, which is cool. Just a very interesting name. Guy was like, I don't think I've heard him on a podcast. I remember mentioning the one person, someone mentioned that. I think I want to give the person credit because I think someone mentioned them on another podcast and I didn't hear that. So I want, and it's definitely somebody worth mentioning too. It was on Pool Hitter Pod, from my understanding. Oh, wow. And his name's going to bother me. Hold on, I got it right here. Matt Thompson. Thank you. I couldn't think of his first name.
Matt Thompson?
Yeah, and if Matt Thompson mentions a guy, I usually listen. I have to go back and listen to that pod because I believe he was on Pool Hitters pod with and he mentioned that name. That's what someone told me because I was texting Dom about him, I think. And Dom's like, oh, yeah, I heard about him on this. I was like, oh, well, that's good company. At least I brought up a name that – and I just didn't hear the pod yet. I actually need to go back and listen to that pod because Matt Thompson's a very smart guy, and I really
respect him.
I respect anything he says about a player. So
Prospects
if he's
in live, guy, everybody, Prospects Live, Matt Thompson.
If he mentions a guy, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Prospects Live, Matt Thompson. That's where you can find the Prospect Live.
Sorry, yeah, I should probably be more. I'm just, yeah, and, yeah. He's a great follow, just a smart dude. And anything Cardinals too, that's kind of his thing. But in general, though, smart dude. So when he speaks about a prospect, you should listen. And that's why I was like, when someone told me that he mentioned, I was like, sweet, that makes me feel better. But with that said, I still haven't targeted him nearly enough or at all. Honestly, like I said, one or two shares, but just a end game guy that you can look at. Cause the problem is like you can dream on so many end game guys. So it's like, I like them, but then I also like a lot of guys around there. Like it's weird. 750 feels like a hard area to find players until you start digging. And then you find reasons like so many players going there.
All righty. Real quick before we head on out, final thoughts on the season for the Miami Marlins.
They suck and expect them to sell off whatever they can. New ownership, same shit, and lacking of spending. That's why I wrote down word for word, so I just wanted to read it.
Perfect. Fifth place in the East it is. Sounds good. Top draft pick in 2025 or 26, whenever it actually happens. But we'll see where all that goes. But again, as my friend, always a pleasure having you join me. Remind everybody where they can find you.
On X, apparently, is what it's called, right? At @Mike_Kurland, MLB playing time is kind of my main thing. I do freelance for The Athletic and for Fantasy Pros. I'm actually a couple articles behind for them, so gotta get on that. But yeah, appreciate you having me on, as always, Bubba. I'm sure we'll chop it up soon.
Yes, we will. I'll have you back on soon. Previews, team by team previews are done in a couple weeks, and I'll be firing up crazy amounts of draft content and whatnot. So you'll be back for sure. Make sure y'all check out MLBPlayingTime.com. It's really, really cool, and more stuff coming that way. But for now, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 639, your 2024 Miami Marlins team preview. Catch y'all next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.